Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back. We're back. We were gone for a while. I mean, like a while. So we are back. Browner and Lawhead. I'm John Browner. I'm joined by my co-host, Jason Lawhead. He is there. I am here. And we are coming to you courtesy of the Mightier 1090, also known as the ESPN Mightier 1090. We haven't worked out the wording yet, but we are an ESPN affiliate now. We are officially a one-hour show on ESPN three times a week. So suck it, fools. Ooh-wee. What'd you think about that, Jason?
I think it's great. Very exciting stuff. Obviously, congrats to Dan Hayes.
To us.
And all of us and everybody that made the deal work. And I think, you know, obviously, if you live in this Southern California region in San Diego, you know that this signal, when you trip over it, if you're not a regular listener, it's always clear as a bell up and down all over this county and beyond. And I think, it's just an exciting time. Like we talked about last week when we were teasing it, as I filled in for Scott, we were kind of teasing when we were rating it, what it was, 9, 10, right, whatever I thought. I really think it's closer to a 10. I said 9.5, but it cool stuff. Very humbled to be a part of it and grateful, and congrats to everybody. And it'll be a good year. Yeah, absolutely.
So the year's off to a great start, man. So you can always, as usual, hear us via podcast through the iTunes podcast store as Kaplan and Crew. We are the show with the date in front, Browner and Lawhead. You can also hear us or see us via Twitter. No, I'm sorry, via YouTube behind Kaplan and Crew. We're the greatest show in the Great Friends Podcast Network because we're the only show and because we're the best show. So it's 2-for-1, regardless of how you look at it. We number one. You can find us on there as well. On today's show, I think y'all know what we're talking about. I don't want to give it away, but I think y'all know we're talking about last night's game. We're also going to get into maybe what happened with the Rams. We're going to get into some coaching firing if we have time. We're absolutely going to get into the actual playoff scenarios. We won't pick winners yet. We'll just kind of talk about how guys got, where teams got, where they got, if we get to that. Because the show has to start here. And I can't let the show go another second before I make this announcement about Jason being spot on. Now, normally, I'm always right. Jason was 100% correct and would have looked like a pure genius if it wasn't for Coach Staley, who ruined it all by calling a timeout. Jason, will you tell the people what you said on Friday on Kaplan and Crew?
Well, yeah. I mean, I think it was Wednesday when the comments came out, when we talked about Staley's initial comments, when he said, we'll never play for the tie. We're going to, you know, we're going to respect the game. We're going to go for the win, and that's how we're going to play. And I just chimed in afterwards. He said that on the Eisen show, and I just chimed in and said, look, I believe him to an extent, but you're going to tell me that both coaches get put in a position where they know a tie gets them to the next round, because Staley, now Mr. I go for it on 4th and 1 on my own 19, you know, down 3 points in a crucial time of the game. You know what? When he had the chance to go for the win twice, what did he do? He went for the tie. He could have went for the win at the end of regulation. When Herbert got that touchdown, they could have just said, here we go, boys. They're back on their heels. Let's go for 2 and end this thing and put them out of their misery. But guess what he did? He kicked an extra point. And then when he had 4th and 6, moving the ball down the field like he was in overtime, down 3, the guy that had gone for it on 8 fourth downs, and one which was ludicrous on his own 19, just a quarter to and a half to 2 quarters before.
And by the way, that was the only one he didn't make.
What?
That was the only one he didn't make.
That was the only one he didn't make. And he handed off between
the one that
tackles.
Was a yard.
He went in between the tackles on 4th and 1 instead of getting creative like he did on all the other 4th downs. And, you know, you're already back there. Why are you going to try to just risk squeezing that yard out between the tackles and not get creative and try to get a chunk to 14 to 18 to 20 possibly in that play and then really give the Raiders a gut punch there? But no, I mean, what's funny is he would have been better off taking the safety, you know, and only giving up the 2 points than the 3 that turned around on him. But He had a chance to win it again in overtime. He elected to tie it. And what is he doing, right? When you look back at that, if the Raiders wanted to put that ball down their throat, they would have organized that third down better. They were letting the game and play clock play out. When you see Carr, he's in shotgun with Jacobs on his hip. They were simply going to take that ball at one, hand it between the tackles to Jacobs, cloud of dust. If he gets the first down on 4 yards, great. If he doesn't, if he gets two or three, the ball gets set. There, nobody has to take another timeout if they don't want to. That there's the play clock would have never exceeded the rest of the time that was left. And it, seemingly by the answers by Carr, the answers by others involved, some of the players were on the field that you can kind of read lips. The Raiders were going to let that clock go out. And the games and here's the thing is, if you're the Raiders, you say, well, look, this guy's going to call timeout on third and four. If we don't get the first down, he's got another one. Maybe he calls another one. This guy, his style, the things he does during a game, the way he coaches, you can't trust what this guy's thinking at that set because he has another timeout. And what's funny is if the guy doesn't use the knucklehead timeout and then he brings a defense back on that was less ready than the defense that was already on at third out four. He eliminated a middle linebacker. He gives up 10 yards to Jacobs. And then you're the Raiders going, well, let's put this guy out of his misery now if he wants to play that game. And then he's got one timeout, and he doesn't even use it to at least Hail Mary make Carlson
ice. The kicker.
Make him think about kick one. If it's good, whatever. You make him think if he misses that practice kick, that might get into his head. Like, you don't even use that one in a psychological move. It's like, how do you look Justin Herbert in the eyes after a game like that?
I got to tell you, man, the point that I thought they were in trouble, it wasn't when they were down 13 points with 4 minutes left to go, because I knew the Raiders are terrible, and I knew they were going to find a way to let them get back into this game. I knew Passaccia is a 20-year football coach. He's going to turn around and hand this ball off and punt it back to the defense and force this offense to go all the way down in field because they were up two touchdowns. So I knew what Passaccia was going to do. The question was, could the Chargers execute and get in the end zone? Lo and behold, they do. Fourth down after fourth down after fourth down. Drop pass after drop pass after drop pass after drop pass. Somehow, some way, Justin Herbert kept completing fourth down plays. You now score. There's no time on the clock. The Raiders are absolutely shell-shocked. Their defense is gassed. Max Crosby was unblockable. The last three plays of regulation, he didn't even move. Mm-hmm. So no one on defense had legs. No one. You were on the 2-yard line. You've been captain go for it all year long. The best player on the field is Justin Herbert. He's going to have the ball from the 2-yard line. You kick a field goal. It doesn't make any sense to me. You are, I said this, and I'm going to repeat this. You cannot win a football game looking down and not looking up. What I mean by that is Coach Staley spends so much time staring into that little play sheet, staring into scenarios, staring at percentages, instead of looking up at the field. Using the football knowledge, not the statistical knowledge he has, the football knowledge he has to go, wait, they're not trying to win. They're just running right into the defensive line. The clock's running. Just be cool, baby. We going to the playoffs. Keep your face straight. The Raiders are going to try a 59, 60-yard field goal that they're going to miss. That way, the integrity's still alive, and both teams go to the playoffs. I live to coach another week. No. Timeout. It made no sense. It made no sense at all. And so if I'm the general manager, if I'm the Chargers general manager, if I'm the bonehead trader owner, Dean Spanos, I need to talk to him. Because which guy are you? Because we hired the guy that goes for it. We hired the guy that's a risk taker. We didn't hire the guy who did what he did at the end of regulation. We hired the guy who went for it on 4th and 1 in his own 18-yard line. That's the guy who we hired. This guy who didn't go for it at the end with the ball in our hands and the defense gas, we didn't hire that guy. We didn't. We didn't hire the guy who, again, has them on the ropes. You converted 10 straight fourth downs. You don't go for it again. You kick a field goal. We didn't hire that guy. So what are we doing? Who are you? Who are this person we hired? Because you cost us an opportunity at the playoffs because it was clear as day was what was happening. Post-game, Rich Passaccia said the exact same thing. I kind of thought we were on the same page. Then he called a timeout, and I was like, well, okay, well, we might as well go for it. And they got an eight, nine-yard run, and boom, that's the game.
Right. And there you've got, well, you've said to yourself, I mean, here, now we're going to just go, we're going to go low risk now. For Carlson, it's a chip shot. As long as the snap's great, the hold's great, nobody gets untouched, which with 2 seconds in our last time out, like, we'll take that gamble from this yardage. They may not have taken that gamble. They may have just handed it inside, like I said, because they changed formation. You see on 3rd and 4, right before he calls timeout, Carr is in shotgun with Jacobs right next to him. They were just going to do shotgun, handoff, little something in between the tackles. If it gets us 4 yards, whatever, we'll just slowly go back to our huddle. You guys don't call timeout. And then after the timeout, Carr was under center. They had a different formation. They set a man in motion behind Carr, and they went left side.
They played real football.
They blew San Diego off the ball off the left side, and Jacobs had a hole you could drive a truck through. And then all of a sudden it's, well, hey, let's go to Cincinnati instead of playing the Chiefs. Because if it's a 60-yarder that can get flopped, something, that's not a long way to go for a defensive end or a special teams guy to snatch one
just
up.
Hold it. They would have just, they on fourth down.
They would have went back to just, the huddle.
They would have went to the huddle. And they'd have let the time expire. It would have never come out of the huddle. No. The crowd would have gone crazy.
No.
The internet would have exploded. The NFL would have had some answering to do because this looked like collusion.
Yeah.
But who, that I was voting for chaos. The world was voting for chaos. It was one of the best NFL games I have seen in a very, very long time. It wasn't as if some crazy play happened and they're like, oh, the Chargers are going to charge her. No, that was a well-played game with the exception of over 100 yards in penalties. And the Raiders didn't really blow you out of the water offensively. It wasn't like this weird seesaw back and forth. The Raiders almost really smoked the game, if nothing. And at the end of the day, it doesn't matter because you called a timeout when a timeout didn't need to be called. And the thing that really got me was that next year, these guys are not going to look at him the same. Today, they're probably not looking at him the same. I don't know if I'm in the locker room. I don't know how he can recover from that other than coming back and just being strategically light years ahead of everybody else. But he's a defensive coach whose defense was damn near dead last in the NFL. So now I don't know what to think of him. I really don't know what to think of this coach. They went young. They went strategic. They went statistical. And I really feel like this is going to turn out bad.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think he's a defensive coach, but I think a lot of times defensive coaches, when they have offensive weapons, it's like, you know, dating above, you know, what you should. It's like having a hotter girl than you should. And so your pace, you think your defense is so invincible that you create this pace of play offensively. And even though the Chargers had a couple of a couple of long drives, they like to have a strike quick, strike hard type of offensive mentality, at least throughout the regular season and what got them to this point. And a lot of times, even when you have the kind of defense, especially a pass rush defense that you want to just, you know, let get out of the blocks, when you put them back on the field for more series of football, And, you know, sure, they converted a lot of fourth downs, but when you go for it on fourth down, if you don't convert it, you're putting a defense back out there in stress management because the field position might not be where they'd like to have started. So, you know, you've got to get that balance. I think, you know, there's got to be that balance to say, look, yeah, we're gonna be a defensive minded team, especially when it comes to attacking the quarterback and hitting guys up front. But we can't play the pace of play with our offense, especially when you have guys like Eckler and you can run the ball and you can use different weapons to kind of just salt drives more and let Herbert, you know, not have to go for so many fourth downs, right? Create second and third down situations that are more advantageous for your offense.
Something that's very relatable that is happening in Southern California sports. I think Staley choked. I also think the Rams may have a choke or two at head coach. And I'm going to keep it 100 with y'all. There's no way they should have lost that game. Sean McVay's record leading at halftime was undefeated. It was like 50-something-0. I think it was 54-0.
45-0. That's like Rocky Marciano.
45-0. I had it backwards, 45-54. 45-0. Somehow, the person who owns him is Kyle Shanahan. I don't know how this works. That's the 7th straight loss. 7 that Kyle Shanahan has over Sean McVay. So you're watching that game as well. That happened earlier in the day. So if you're a Southern California sports fan, you think that the Chargers have a bad rap in Los Angeles. They don't have any fans. Their stadium gets taken over. All those things are facts. But are you ready for the real truth? Football in LA ain't that hot. Because did you see the crowd? Did you see how many 49ers fans absolutely blanketed the stands in Los Angeles? So as much as we give the Chargers much deserved, especially from San Diego, as much grief as we give them, your stadium got taken over by the opposing team. Man, the Rams got the same problem. Because for a game of that magnitude, I never thought I would see that. Like, that was a real game you had to win. And that looked like a 49er home crowd. And the 49ers responded in the second half and put that team in a position to win that game.
I'll tell you, that 49er team, I've only had a chance to see them a couple of times from start to finish this year. Obviously, a time or two was early, and they were banged up. And this is, I think, by far, even more than the Chiefs, when you kind of see the Chiefs should have lost that game to Denver and the way they kind of exited out, and even some of the early wins when they got on the streak were not the same kind of cheap wins. They had some weak schedule wins and Aaron Rodgers sitting out wins and whatever. But like, right. I think when you look at the total transformation from start to finish of a football team in the most positive light, it's this team right now. And if I'm Dallas, I'm shaking in my boots with having them come to Dallas with the way our offense has been suspect against that kind of defense. And then the way you can see Jimmy G, and the commitment, like you said, Shanahan had the commitment to say, we're still going to run it down your throat 17-0, and we're going to pick our spots with Kittle and Debo, and you're going to have a hard time defending them in open field space. And because you know we can just go out and get 4, 5, 6 yards every single time we run it and pound you at the run, these alleys and lanes are going to be open in our throwing game. And what a commitment Shanahan made to being down 17-0. And you're right, that was a home crowd. I was blown away hearing the cheers every time a big play happened for the 49ers. And, you know, they're going to travel. Obviously, a Bay Area people live in LA. I get that. But they're going to travel. And there's a lot of seats in Dallas to go buy up. And there's a lot of potential to get your hands on tickets in Dallas. And there's going to be a lot of red and gold in the stadium next week. And I'll tell you, that's the kind of team, and Dak's the vulnerable type of quarterback that You that dude could be getting taken off in a cart in the first or second quarter, and the Dallas Cowboys could be sitting there with a backup quarterback in a playoff game at home against a defense like that with Garoppolo playing at a high, confident level. Oh, boy.
So it was so many things. So many things happened on Sunday that had playoff implications around them. We're gonna get to a lot of those things that happened on Sunday. There was also, by Sunday I mean the playoffs. There was also a lot of coaches got their walking papers today. Some deservedly so, some not so much. We're gonna break down some of that as well. Brown and Lawhead here on the Mightier 1090 again. Now the new ESPN. ESPN. I mean, so technically, Jason, we can tell people we work for ESPN. Yeah, we didn't even work on that. That just happened. We can literally tell people now we work for ESPN. I mean, technically, we work for 1090, but we also work for ESPN because everywhere you go now, everywhere you look, you will see the Mightier 1090 and ESPN in Southern California. And Brown and Lawhead are part of that. We'll be right back. Brown and Lawhead here, second half of the podcast, trying to make the second first better than the first. If you missed anything on the show, you can head over to YouTube or you can head over to the podcast iTunes store, like, share, and subscribe to Brown and Lawhead. We are part of Kaplan and Crew and the Great Friends Sports Network here on the Mightier 1090 ESPN. That's right, ESPN. Brown and Lawhead, we had a lot on the show. Like I said, you guys can head over there if you want to hear anything. We talked a lot about what happened last night with the Chargers and the Raiders and what that turned into or didn't turn into or timed out and turned into. We also broke down a little bit about what happened with the Rams and whether or not we see them doing much. And the 49ers basically scaring the hell out of everybody left in the playoffs because I would be scared too.
Right.
We're going to get into the playoff portion of that as well. There were some firings. Miami fired their coach, Brian Flores. The Vikings, for some reason, fired their coach, Mike Zimmer. But I guess the Bears luckily fired their coach, Matt Nagy, and their general manager. So did Minnesota fired their general manager, too. And Vic Fangio was the first one fired. And we don't even talk about Urban Meyer because, you know, he kicked his way out of the league in more ways than one. So of these firings, Jason, first question is, which firing was the most surprising, one? And two, which one of these four men will get a job first?
Well, I think the Dolphins is the most surprising one, right? You got a team that came in from the playoffs last year. They had some early season struggles, had some injuries, some questions about whether Tua is going to be the Tua they drafted or at least something close to that or a guy that can at least manage some wins. He came back, proved that they could – go on a hot streak, win some games. They were just kind of in one of those weird mathematical elimination type of wild card scenarios with some early losses and head-to-heads that burned them late in the season. But they finished strong. They got win over a New England team trying to, you know, jockey their way into a division title possibly or at least a better seed yesterday. And there you go. I mean, so I got to believe unless they have a real inside track on a guy people want, i.e. Harbaugh. I mean,
who they already said they're not going to get. Their owner, Stephen Ross, said today in a press conference.
I didn't hear the press conference. What was it?
So in the press conference, Stephen Ross said they're not going to be the team that takes Jim Harbaugh out of Michigan. So that's one out.
That's one out. Well, that's interesting because as we talked about the Pete Carroll dilemma earlier in the year on the show, when you and I debated like, hey, do you think they'll get rid of him? There's talk. Some people want him out, yada, yada. So far he's survived. And I think if Pete Carroll was going to be done, it probably would have been on the Monday of just, you know, let's all join the fray and not try to stand out as the team that fired somebody a week after the season while playoffs are going on and right. The only press conference in town. So, but I always say you never take a job until you have one and you never fire a guy at something like this type of a level of, you know, executing your football franchise unless you have a really clear cut other win or at least two or three you'll really want to interview that you know if you can pick one of those three, you're in good shape. But I don't know where the Dolphins go from here then if it isn't Harbaugh on the inside track.
I think the Dolphins are in a lot of trouble because I don't think sometimes – I mean, don't get me wrong. These NFL jobs are highly coveted. No one's turning them down. But when you have multiple openings, you're not the first option. Because now I don't – a lot of people have taken the Raiders off the list of openings. Now, I think that's a mistake. But Rich Bisaccia seems to be getting the fan base – and the players seem to be behind him maintaining that job. So for now, we'll take him off the list.
If Rich Bisaccia beats the Chiefs in Kansas City this weekend, he will be the coach of the Raiders no matter if they get beat 50-0 in the next round. He will be the coach of the Raiders next year if he beats the Chiefs. And that's what the – but right now, Mark Davis has been through so much instability. I think that if he can get a win like that of the ages, how do you let this guy go?
I can't, you know what? I can't argue with that. Now, before, if they win that game, you're right. The job is his, but I don't think they will.
Well,
but if
no,
they do, I agree with you. I think the job is
crazy
his.
Crazy season, and they've done something. That's why I said I didn't even like them to outplay the Chargers. I love Justin Herbert. I don't, but
who
something
was phenomenal.
Like the Raiders were going to win that game somehow, no matter how. I just had that feeling, and I said it last week.
And so the Dolphins have their quarterback in situation. If you look around the teams that just got quarterbacks who just fired their head coach, so you got Tua as a quarterback in place, Kirk Cousins is the quarterback in place, in Chicago you assume it would be Justin Fields, and Denver has no quarterback. So if we're looking at and Jacksonville has Trevor Lawrence. So if we're looking at the quarterback, the openings, and you're tying them to quarterbacks, I got to tell you, man, the Miami job doesn't look attractive because you don't know what Tua is. He's small. He's been hurt every year he's played. And he came in with a hip replacement, so you really don't know where that is. True. So if it seems to me what happened in Miami was that Brian Flores went to the general manager and he went to the owner. He said, we need to find a way to get Deshaun Watson. And they looked at him and was like, well, that's going to cost too much. And he looked at them like, Tua's not the guy. The general manager goes, yeah, he is. The owner goes, well, what's wrong with him? Yeah, he is. And Brian Flores went, I'm coaching him every day. No, he's not. Yeah. And it's like, well, we need to get somebody in here who does think that way. And Brian Flores probably looked at the landscape and went, I could get one of these other jobs. All right, I'm out. Cool. Fire me. Boom. I think that's how that played out because he's got a winning record. He's back-to-back winning seasons. Playoff last year. Was on the verge of making playoffs this year. Who around the NFL is firing a coach like that right now?
Yeah, I mean, that's a good point. That's a really good point. Because unless you're ready to announce X-Man, this guy is our
today,
new coach today, right now. We, you know, we were going to move on. We thank him. And here we go, ladies and gentlemen, Jim Harbaugh or Dabo Sweeney or whoever you're, you know. Maybe it's
Eric
Dabo.
Behenemy.
Maybe it's Dabo. Maybe they're the ones saying, hey, let's get Deshaun Watson and let's hire Dabo and we'll make a nice little reunion. I don't know because, you know, I don't know what Dabo Sweeney's thoughts are about ever coming to the NFL. But if Dabo Sweeney ever did come to the NFL, I think the best and only thing you could do is either give him Deshaun Watson or Trevor Lawrence to coach. But I'm just making up scenarios. But you may be right. I mean, there may be that talk that said, hey, look, we're looking up the barrel of Josh Allen for a lot of years. And depending on, you know, Mac Jones' sophomore year, if there isn't a jinx, we've got a real deal in New England again with the greatest coach in the history of football. So, yeah, like that's where I'm at. Where are you?
Zach Wilson might be a guy with the Jets.
Exactly. So it makes sense if he was the kind of guy that was like, all right, well, fire me. I'll catch on. And I've got the resume right now. And you know what? If you're not going to move on from the quarterback to challenge these guys and these two teams, then this is probably a better decision for all parties involved. And sometimes you're right. It just goes down like that. So it's surprising on the face, right? When you read Dolphins fire, you're like, well,
right.
I was tweeting earlier, way earlier in the day before I heard of this press conference. And I was like, they got to have an inside track on Harbaugh. What are they doing when you look at this? But, you know, I would like to see maybe Vic Fangio have another chance in Denver, though. You know, defensively, that team, you know, with injuries, still played really well throughout the season. You're right. No quarterback. Pat Shurmur is just a you know, you've heard of a quarterback whisper. He's a quarterback beat cymbals in your head. Just you know what I mean? Like, just he's a quarterback. He's the animal of quarterbacks, like from the Muppets. But I would have liked to seen them maybe try to use a draft pick to get one of those quarterbacks that are available. And
I think the person, they fired the wrong person. They should have fired John Elway.
Well, they're never going to fire John Elway, and that's the point. And so John Elway is just going to go through coaches and quarterbacks, and, you know, Peyton got
no general manager. I think he's the president of football operations, but no general manager has been worse at drafting quarterbacks than John Elway. It's not even close. It's like not even close. And don't tell me Peyton Manning, because Peyton Manning chose them. Right. They didn't choose Peyton Manning. So if anybody is going to be in a running, and I think there's a couple of other ways that this is going to turn out and how this is going to look. If anybody's going to be in a running for Aaron Rodgers, I 100% believe it is going to be Denver or Miami fighting out for the chance to give Green Bay whatever they want, because Miami's got a ton of picks. They've got a lot of leg room to facilitate a trade of that magnitude. But between the Chicago Bears and the Minnesota Vikings and the Jacksonville Jaguars, I think those are the best suited jobs. If you want the most ready, I think it's Minnesota. They've got talent on both sides of the ball, and they have a stable quarterback who can run an NFL offense. The Chicago Bears have a good defense, but that defense is getting old. But you do appear, some believe, me count me as one of those who appear, that Justin Fields is the quarterback. And it'll be his second year, and he'll know nothing particularly in the NFL as far as offense goes. And you can make him into whatever you want him to look like. So to me, unless somebody else gets fired, that's the most attractive job. It's got the biggest market left. It's got the biggest market left over. It's got the most traditional level of franchise. It's got the best fan base left over. But I don't know if the number one candidate being Jim Harbaugh, I don't know what he is looking at when he's looking at these jobs. Because the Bears fired their general manager, by the way, as well, for a reason. So whoever they want to get with as the head coach, they're going to have a say in who the general manager is.
Yeah, it's interesting. The whole Harbaugh kind of just hovering over this, the idea of some of these coaching vacancies. Because he's obviously, if he's mentioned these seem to be substantiated rumors of interest and talk, then he's not using it as any leverage to get more money out of Michigan. He's already re-signed that deal that took the pay cut years last year, I think it was.
Right. The they gave year. Him in a pay cut. Now they're going to do what? Give him the money back?
Yes, to extend 4 years. So there's no wiggle room there to get anything out of that. But it is interesting. I mean, if you feel like you think Rodgers is going to get moved, you don't think he'll be a Packer next year. Is that what you're kind of hinting to? Or are you just playing that side of the coin right now?
While we're on the topic of Aaron Rodgers, I would hate to interrupt the flow of this discussion, but I saw something that really, really, really made me hate the internet. So there was a rumor going around the internet that Aaron Rodgers has told Jordan Love if the team makes it to the Super Bowl, he's going to boycott it over vaccines.
Oh, yeah, I heard. Who's reported that? Somebody that he went after.
So if this is why I hate the internet, and this is why I hate social media, because a rumor like that can, as they say, make its way around the world before the truth puts its pants on. I'm not a fan of Aaron Rodgers. I don't know how you feel about Aaron Rodgers. I'm not a fan, mostly because he kicks the teeth in of the Chicago Bears, but I also think he's a jerk. So, with that being said, I never doubt that his competitive fire. I never doubt that he's all for the team, regardless of what he thinks of the front office. I don't think there's a chance in hell that if the Green Bay Packers made the Super Bowl, he would boycott it because of vaccine restrictions that Roger Goodell has made. But I just wanted to get that out of the way because I thought that was stupid, and I keep hearing that and people keep saying that, and I just want to kill that here and now. I think Rodgers will be on the move, and if you are Miami, if you are Denver, what a feather in your cap to have, because both those teams retained their general managers, to say we can go get Aaron Rodgers because we know he doesn't want to play in Green Bay anymore.
Yeah, no, I mean, Rodgers would be the key landing point anywhere. And if it's going to be a place, you'd think he might choose a place that has a coaching vacancy that he can kind of parlay that with ownership and the front office as well to kind of align that. He seems awful.
And
seems awful.
Miami would have the upper leg because they can trade the Packers an actual physical, living, breathing quarterback as the Broncos cannot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's an interesting query. And if he did go to either Miami or Denver, that makes those jobs really attractive because, like you said, yes. Miami's already got a lot of pieces in place. And that defense in Denver, keep that healthy, work the offense around Rodgers. You know, that just makes, boy, what a division that would be. Huh? If Aaron Rodgers came to the AFC West with Herbert, Mahomes, and still Carr playing at a, you know, Houdini-like type of level. He's playing at this, you know, really good for Derek Carr. And he's, man, there was a couple of times, even though the Raiders defense, you know, buckled on a lot of fourth downs late when they almost ended the game several times, Carr really looked just poised, even just trying to get first downs when they needed them, even though they didn't get scores in those last couple drives. He just seems like he's locked in Houdini-wise. So that would be fun. I'm actually rooting
Derek Carr.
I'm actually, because we cover what we cover out here, I'm actually rooting for Rodgers to go to Denver, but that would make next football season a lot of fun to talk about.
Derek Carr deserves some form of award. I don't know what it needs to be. I don't know if the NFL can create it. I don't know if Walter Payton Man of the Year award can be shoveled over to him because of what he's actually done in-house. But the Raiders need to create an award and recognize what he's been to that franchise, because everyone who will tell you Rich Bisaccia should keep the job doesn't understand the level of leadership that Derek Carr has provided, not only to this team, but for this organization in a new city. So I love the fact that everybody's on the Rich Bisaccia train, but please, please, let's recognize Derek Carr, who, by the way, I wasn't a fan of the start of the year, and I'm still not really a fan of now, but leadership is unquestionable in that locker room, who the leader of that team is. And so I don't know what they're going to do against Cincinnati. I don't know what they're going to do in the playoffs. What I do know is the Raiders are in a very solid place with their quarterback.
Yeah, absolutely. They, you know, I flubbed earlier saying that they would play the Chiefs. They don't play the Chiefs. They play the Bengals.
If it would have tied.
I think you said if they would have tied. No, if Bisaccia wins a playoff game this week, if they beat the Bengals, that job will be his. I just don't think you could go away from it.
See, I disagree.
I want to correct that error I made earlier in the show. You disagree. If they were to beat the Bengals and move on and get to that second round, I just got to believe that Mark Davis is going to see that as a vision from something that Gruden, you know, it's easier to say, hey, thanks, Bisaccia got us. He held us in there, and we still have ways to go because Cincinnati beat us. I think if he wins, I think it's a sign to say what we went through from Gruden, the commitment we made. I mean, unless he's already got a deal done with Harbaugh, I mean, I just don't see how you move on going in if he wins the playoff game.
Let me present a question to you. We got 3 minutes left. Was Freddie Kitchens the right hire?
No, not at all.
Okay,
no, hold on. Coach a playoff game or take a team from the middle of the pack into a playoff scenario.
Let me explain to you why I'm asking you that question, though. At the end of the season, everybody felt great about Freddie Kitchens, right? Baker felt great. The fan base felt great. The front office felt great. Any real football person knew this guy didn't know. He's not a head coach. Everybody knew that. But the good old boy, the feeling, the energy in the front office, the fan base, everybody thought, oh, this is going to work. You ignored everything else because you thought, oh, this is going to work. He wasn't the guy. I saved the Freddie Kitchens example because I want people to understand, don't get swept up in the moment. Look at how they're winning the games.
Yeah, no, that's a great argument, and you know, it definitely it sinks in. There's no doubt, and you know, I think though there's, and you're right. I mean, look, Carr has been the guy that has been, like I said, the Houdini for this whole escape trick that they've been able to pull off and get to the playoffs. But and that's a great point. I just don't think Freddie Kitchens is. I think he's such below the level of even a Passaccia. I wouldn't entertain it. That's why I think if they win the game against Cincy, that separates some type of. But I don't get your sentiment, and I believe what you're saying. But I think it's a great point.
Winning the playoff game wouldn't necessarily do you any good if you're the owner of the Raiders. You kind of just won another game. Now, if you beat the Chiefs,
sure,
in the next round,
yeah,
now we cooking.
Yeah,
now you, because they smoked you twice this year,
right? Smoke.
And then the third time you figure out a way to get past them. Now you've convinced me as the owner, you've got something going with sure. this team. So we're gonna keep this ball rolling together yeah. for a couple of years to right. see if you can extend this. But if they beat the Bengals,
I was
Bengals,
right originally. I just had the week messed up that they were playing them earlier in the first segment.
Yes,
but I was right. Yes. If you beat the Chiefs, you can't go away from this guy.
You can't. You can't. All right, if you beat the Bengals,
we like 65% agree on this point.
Yes, because if they beat the Bengals first playoff game, and who knows when.
And the Kitchens comparison's great, Browner. I'll give it to you. There's no doubt that lingers above that type of thinking. No doubt about it. And it's a great argument to plant if it's just the Bengals they beat.
Yes.
And you're right.
So, man, what a weekend, dude. What a weekend. We haven't even had the chance to talk about Clay Day. Welcome back, Clay Thompson. We didn't even get the chance to talk about, I mean, at some point we will get to John Morant, which,
I love this.
Oh, my God. But we got a time. We out of time. Yeah. So tomorrow, Brown and Lawhead on the Mightier 1090 ESPN. I think that's what I'm going to call it. Peace. Yeah.
Rest in peace, Bob Saget.